You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. The Bush administration has indicated that it will be weeks, not months, before going to war with Iraq. And in the face of an ongoing debate about using funds from Iraqi oil to fund the war, London Observer commentator and former cast member of Monty Python, Terry Jones, offers these rather unique suggestions.
There's a debate going on in the White House as to whether or not to use funds from the Iraqi oil fields to help pay for the American invasion of Iraq. Well, I don't know what there is to debate. It's a brilliant idea. Now, I know there are bound to be a few spoil sports who say that the oil from the Iraqi oil fields belongs to the Iraqi people, and that the US has no right to appropriate any income from it. But let's face it, the Iraqi people are going to have the privilege of being bombed by the most modern, best-equipped, and most expensive army in the whole world. It's only right and proper that they should pay for it. Now, according to the Congressional Budget Office, the initial deployment of troops will cost the American taxpayer between $9 billion and $13 billion. Conducting the war is estimated at $6 billion to $9 billion a month, and returning forces home at $5 billion to $7 billion. While the occupation of Iraq itself will cost between $1 billion and $4 billion a month. So, how do we come up with a fair estimate of what the Iraqis should actually be paying to the US out of their huge oil reserves? I suggest they should pay according to results. Now, a secret report compiled by the UN has estimated the American-British attack on Iraq is likely to produce 500,000 casualties. That is, 500,000 Iraqi citizens will, quote, require medical treatment to a greater or lesser degree as a result of direct or indirect injuries, according to the World Health Organization. 3.03 million Iraqis will suffer from malnutrition, perhaps even more, since 16 million currently rely on the food basket provided by the Iraqi government. So let's say 10 million will suffer from starvation. 2 million will be displaced, and perhaps another 1 million will become refugees. 3.6 million will need emergency shelter. Well, as my contribution to the war effort, I would like to suggest the following tariff as a way of containing the unimaginable costs of this great Anglo-American humanitarian undertaking. For every adult Iraqi killed, I suggest the Iraqis should pay the Americans $1,000. For every Iraqi child under 12, the Iraqis should pay the Americans on the following scale: $500 for those children killed outright, and $400 for those children who die within a month as a result of injuries sustained. For every infant under the age of 3 years, the Iraqis should pay the US $12.50 for those killed outright and $12 for those who die subsequently. For the newborn babies blown to bits or killed by flying glass or crushed under collapsing hospital buildings, $1. Any child killed or mutilated as a result of Allied action for which proof can be provided that they had previously been ill or suffering from malnutrition and hence may have died anyway could be exempted from the full charge, but should pay the US Treasury a token fee of 25 cents only. For the wounded, I would suggest an itemized costing, regardless of age, on the following lines: $15 for every limb severed, crushed, or mutilated, with a premium of $10 for the loss of the right arm, and an extra $20 if they should lose both. Anyone wounded in the head should pay the Americans $25. Every Iraqi citizen blinded as a result of American or British bombing should pay $40. If a whole family is wiped out, either by bombing or in the unlikely event of street fighting, either relatives of the family or the Iraqi government should pay the US $1,000. Any family made homeless as a result of the disruption and chaos created by Allied action should pay the Americans $500. Individuals should be charged a flat fee of $100. Those deprived of drinking water as a result of the bombing should pay a special charge of $50, regardless of whether or not they have already paid for any injuries sustained. This should be non-negotiable. Those who starve to death should pay for a flat rate of $100. Those who contract cholera or typhoid as a result of the anticipated disruption to the sewage system and drinking water supplies should pay the U.S. government $30 and cover the costs of any medical aid they may have needed, whether they receive it or not. Well, on this basis, if we are lucky enough to chalk up 200,000 Iraqi civilians killed outright, that would provide $2 billion. 10 million suffering from starvation would provide the US Treasury with around $1 billion, and 5 million homeless would put another $5 billion into the government's nest egg. Of course, this would only pay for 1 month's occupation, and the rest would have to be found amongst the American taxpayers. So perhaps the fairer way would be for the above charges to be levied on a monthly basis. Well, I hope Mr. Bush will take this proposal seriously, and that I have contributed to the well-being of our two great countries, and have helped Mr. Bush in his ambition to further the principles of humanity and democracy by bombing innocent people who have never done him the slightest harm.
That bit of satire, compliments of Terry Jones, commentator for the London Observer and former cast member of the Monty Python's Flying Circus.
To all you merchants of lies who advertise peace while you bomb from the skies, your words they mean nothing, your money means less, your pretense of goodwill's misguided at best. Your children have left you, and one thing I know is your days are soon to be over. To all you merchants of lies, as big as you are, you'll be brought down to size. Who proclaim your mission is democracy, where the poor pay for prison and the rich live for free. Well, even a deaf, dumb and blind man can see, your days are soon to be over.
Stefan Smith, Merchant of Lies. More than 1,000 people held an anti-war protest Saturday in Amman, Jordan, in the first authorized demonstration in several months. With its parliament dissolved since June 2001, Jordan is governed with decrees, laws of exception, and arbitrary arrest. Though expressions of popular dissent are usually prohibited, Jordanian public opinion is generally in sharp contrast with the Crown on the issues of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and the impending war with Iraq. Raphael Kraft reports from Amman.
We want to defend Baghdad with our souls and our blood. Bush, be careful, we're going to burn you. Saddam Hussein on Tel Aviv. These are the slogans that were chanted by more than 1,000 demonstrators in protest against US-British plans to wage war on Iraq. A bellicose atmosphere for an anti-war demonstration called by the opposition parties in Jordan, represented by Islamic and left-wing parties. Hassan, a sympathizer of the Islamic Action Front, waved the portrait of Saddam Hussein posing with a Kalashnikov machine gun.
I love Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein.
I am with Saddam Hussein. I want to support the Iraqi people, and I want the embargo to be lifted. This is the least I can do as a Jordanian, to go in a march and support Iraq, which has always supported Jordan and Arab countries.
Palestinian flags are waved, an Israeli flag is burned by some members of the Communist Party strongly opposed to the peace treaty with Israel. When Jordan signed a peace treaty with Israel in 1994, religious movements like the Muslim Brotherhood that used to be loyal to the Crown joined the opposition. The Islamic Action Front is the political representation of this movement. Khaled belongs to this political party, the most popular and the best organized in Jordan.
If America and Israel attack Iraq, we should go to Tel Aviv. Palestine is our land. Israel is occupied. The Jewish should go to their lands, from Poland, from Moscow, anywhere they came from.
If King Abdullah of Jordan has refused the use of its soil and airspace by U.S.-British troops and planes to conduct operations against Iraq, U.S. troops are present in the Jordanian desert. The kingdom is to receive 3 batteries of Patriot missiles and F-16 U.S.-made fighter jets. And the king is seen on national television with firemen testing nuclear, biological and chemical-proof clothes, while rumors of a broader involvement of Jordan in the war are spreading. Dr. Said, the Secretary General of the Jordanian Democratic Party of Popular Union, the Jordanian emanation of the Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine, gives his opinion on King Abdullah's position.
King Abdullah has said that he will not facilitate the acts of the United States. We need this, and we insist that this must be done and not be acts.
Trade unions and representatives of the civil society too took part in the first authorized demonstration by the regime in months. Requests for demonstrations need to be formulated a week in advance to the government to get an approval. In this case, the government refused to allow the opposition party's higher coordination committee to demonstrate in front of the royal palace. Instead, the demonstrators walked toward the United Nations building of Amman. Hassem Omari, a lawyer and human rights activist, took part in the demonstration.
On est assez, je veux dire, restrictif dans la matière de l'expression publique en Jordanie.
Public expression is restricted in Jordan, especially since the parliament has been dissolved, as well as the municipality councils and other bodies of representation. Jordan's grave breaches on democracy are tolerated and not very criticized by Western countries because it's an allied country. Jordanians are always ready to demonstrate if they are given the possibility.
Les Jordaniens sont toujours prêts à défiler s'ils ont la possibilité.
As the demonstration reaches the United Nations building surrounded by anti-riot forces, portraits of King Abdullah start being waved in the air. On a podium, one of the representatives of the opposition parties requests the people to leave peacefully so another demonstration can be authorized and held. For Pacificas Peace Watch, I'm Raphael Kraft in Amman.
More than 45 anti-war resolutions have been passed by cities and municipalities across the U.S. The familiar apathetic disclaimer applied to the American body politic is losing its relevance as citizens groups from across the political spectrum meet and discuss the Bush administration's war plans. Last week, Los Alamos, New Mexico held a forum of its own. Los Alamos is most often mentioned as the birthplace of the nuclear bomb, yet it is also a vibrant and culturally diverse intellectual community. The nuclear plant is still alive and active, while at this forum the focus was on peace. At the meeting, Vietnam vets, nuclear lab workers, and young people all gave ample reason to oppose the war in Iraq and protect the Constitution in this defense town. Participants spoke on a variety of contradictions in Washington and the effects that the motives of the administration could have in derailing future peace.
But as a citizen, I feel very strongly that it's my duty to question the policy of unilateral action without the support of the United Nations. I'm coming from a human perspective this time, a human perspective given my military experience and combat experience. My values were changed during the Vietnam War. I was raised in a conservative family, and I went to war with the intent of defending my country and defending democracy. The 2 years of PTSD, we had suicides, and I don't know, a little known fact that you may not know is that more Vietnam vets have taken their own lives than were killed in action, and that is the truth. I question the idea of not only military people but citizens being killed and maimed and their lives ruined.
In 1992, Colonel Oliver North testified to Congress that Osama bin Laden was the greatest threat to the security of the United States. The administration in power for the following 8 years failed to pursue and capture bin Laden, even though he was directly responsible for and boastful about the deaths of thousands. On September 11th, over 3,000 people paid the price for that failure to act. Now President Bush correctly informs us that Saddam Hussein's regime is part of an axis of evil and a threat to the interests of the United States, to the Middle East, and to the world. How long will we wait to act? Will it take another September 11th? Most of you want proof positive that Saddam Hussein is a threat. What you're really saying is you want more proof. You already know about the invasion in Kuwait. You already know about Iraq's war with Iran and his use of chemical agents to kill or maim hundreds of thousands of Iranians. You already know that he has sworn an oath to destroy Israel and kill every single Jew in the Middle East. One of the problems the president faces is he can't always reveal what he knows because of the consequences of revealing that information. What price are you willing to have the Iraqi workers pay for the proof you want? We want freedom. Saddam wants the power to control lives and eliminate freedom. We have a president who was voted into office. Iraq has a president king who rose to power by having every Shia Muslim member of the Ba'ath Party ruling council executed. America will confront gathering dangers early by showing our resolve today. We are building a future of peace.
There's a difference between a patriot and a chauvinist and a jingoist. I'm a patriot. I am a veteran. I was in the United States Army from 1966 to 69. All politics is local. If and when there's a war, people from this county may die. Our children, our brothers, our sisters. If that's not local, I'd sure like to know what is. We won't be alone. 42 other governments, city governments in the United States that have opposed a preemptive unilateral strike in Iraq. Will Bush and his administration listen to us? They desperately want this war. All indications are that they will not. When the government rejects the will of the people must act for themselves. Thank you.
I would like to hear somebody address the question of why this war has been in the works, in the plans, since the end of 92, frankly. There's a lot of confusion about why we're going to war here, but really there is no reason for mystery. The influential people in this administration are on record. You can read what they want, what their goals are, what their objectives are. Their statement of principles, this is dated 1997. And the S on principles is superfluous because they have one principle. It is America must dominate the world militarily. In 2000, they put out a document proposing a war on Iraq. This has nothing to do with September 11th. And we, the American people, are the only people, apparently, that can do anything at all about stopping this war. The administration has made clear its contempt for international law, and the international community, although it is uniformly against us, is having absolutely no effect. Only we in the United States have even the slightest hope of stopping this war. Thank you.
What I'm worried about is if we set a precedence where we will go to war because we think that there are weapons of mass destruction, or that we think that there are evil people in the world, or we think that the nation of Israel may be attacked, I think this is a bad precedence. And you have to understand that the administration is setting new precedents here and new policy. The policy is, which has been stated by Condoleezza Rice, is that we will attack any country which tries to reach parity with us. If you think that policy through, that means if China continues on its path of nuclear arming, that our duty then is to attack China, according to this policy. Or do we attack because the United Nations resolutions have not been followed? Does that mean that we then attack Israel because they are not following United Nations resolutions?
At some point in time, we have to have faith that our leaders have access to information that we don't necessarily have.
Several of my friends have recently joined the military, and actually a couple of them are about to be shipped out to Iraq. So to me, it already feels like the war has begun. But the scariest part of this entire thing is that my generation is really, really ignorant on this subject. Like, when I asked them what they were going to do out in Iraq, who they'd be fighting, they said Al-Qaeda. Like, a lot of them don't really even know that Saddam Hussein has a part in this. Before we actually act and make a whole lot of my friends either die or have really big mental problems because of this, I'd like them to get some real information. Because I'm not saying that I know a whole lot on the subject, but I know a hell of a lot more than most of them do. If we act especially without UN on our side, I think that that's the most dangerous and I'm sorry, but stupid thing that we could do. So I guess that's all that I can really say. I'd just like you to, you know, if you know any young people, talk to them and actually, you know, get the information into our heads so we know what's going on. That's a whole lot more important than blowing people up.
I can remember when one war was started on the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, which was fake. We got us into this on a lie, essentially a pretext. We went to invade Grenada because Irangate was getting hot and sent the troops off without even a map of the island. Now we have a government that was elected by a minority of the popular vote. Before 9/11, they felt that we should invade Iraq after 9/11, despite the fact that the CIA disagreed. They felt that by invading Iraq, we were taking care of al-Qaeda, despite the lack of connection. We would be very wise to mistrust both the motives and the intelligence of the people who are trying to foist this on us. And if we, through our own representative government, don't speak up, then who is going to speak up?
I came from a place where Scott Ritter came to visit his sisters. And according to him, they had prepared their final document, which there were no dangerous components. Moment of departure, they were to send in this document. And they did send it in, but it was refused by the White House because they had planned a bombing run on Baghdad the next day. So if you're talking about the integrity of the leaders, boy, I don't know who you're talking about.
And my reality of war has to do with this kind of consequence, what happens to the people who are involved. My sense and my, I guess my message or my plea to anyone here tonight is to please not dehumanize. They're not only on our side, they're on the other side. They're innocent people who are just trying to live with their families and make their way in life. I know that there are many considerations, economic, geopolitical, historical, and they've all been spoken to tonight, and I respect all that has been said. Realize that peace is patriotic. We have to work with every last bit of energy to make that a reality. Thank you.
A recent forum in Los Alamos, New Mexico, where citizens were considering passing an anti-war resolution. Finally tonight, this musical reflection from a Washington area actor and performance artist, Funkus Velvet.
I'm playing today for creative freedom. For dignity, for all life, and world peace. And I want to ask you, how many wars must there be before you realize no man is your enemy? How much blood must spill before your heart begins to fill? 'Cause God knows there's been enough pain, and I'd rather not see tomorrow if tomorrow's going to be the same as it is today. So you can put it to my head and pull the trigger and blow me away. 'Cause I tell you clearly, your tyranny puts no fear in me. So throw down your weapons, for your weapons are useless against me. For I am a creator born free. I am a creator born free. And my mind has passed through the fear of death. And I'm just here watching the breath. For love is so easy to say, only if we followed its way. Only if we followed its way, we wouldn't kill one another. You wouldn't see my color. And our mothers and our sisters would not be raped. And you would not take what did not belong. And we're all still waiting for the light to dawn. How many wars must there be before you realize that no man can be free until all men are free? I can hear a sound in the distance, and it's blowing like a thundering rain. Can you hear it? I can hear a sound in the distance, and it's crashing like a runaway train. Can you feel it? Babylon is falling, and the spirit is calling. And out of this night that covers me, black as the pit from pole to pole, I think whatever the gods may be for my unconquerable soul.
Funkus Velvet is an actor and artist here in the nation's capital. He joined us in our studios last week. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. by Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is Granger Helvey. We had production assistance from Adil Hamad of KPFA, Keith Shalijan, Jackson Allers, and Angelique Shofar. Special thanks also to Stephen Fettig. Thanks to Pete Karakis, RadioForAll.net, and Shane Rock at WebActive.com for web help. Special thanks to our consulting producers, Larry Bensky and Sam Husseini. Copies of this program can be ordered from the Pacifica Radio Archives by visiting the website at pacificaarchives.org or by calling 1-800-735-0230. If you'd like to support this type of programming, we urge you to visit pacifica.org and make a pledge through our secure online website, or you can send your donations to Pacifica Radio, 2390 Champlain Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20009. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. Send us your feedback to peacewatch@pacifica.org. I'm Verna Avery Brown, the executive producer. Thank you for listening.